stay locked in and fully loaded.
Ashanti Radio
and Verkay Radio.
They said we couldn't do it,
but we global now, worldwide. Boom, in your face. Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything.
Coming to you from the Bashani Network in New York City, live on the iHeart Radio Network. You can connect with us at Lady Z on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and visit us online at jazzandtechlounge.com. Lady Z, the Jazz and Tech Lounge, where we explore tech and enjoy the music. Today's guest, I am so excited to introduce to some and present to others the fabulous, the the amazing, the incredible Marie Smith. She is the Chief Information Officer for Data 360, which is helping the city of Los Angeles move forward into this new realm of artificial intelligence and big data. So welcome, Marie. How are you today? How are you today, Marie?
I'm great. How are you? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you now just fine.
That's great.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have you on. And I wanted to say that I'm so impressed with all the work that you're doing with artificial intelligence, and particularly some of the access that you're helping entrepreneurs have to this technology. And so my first question to you is, what is artificial intelligence and what does that mean to you?
That's a great question. I always try to keep it super simple. And one of the things I tell people artificial intelligence is, it's just like a recipe. It's like giving the computer a set of instructions to follow that can then be repeated and actually learned upon. So the computer has the ability, once you give it its instructions, to actually add to those instructions or do new things with those instructions. And so there's a series of pieces of software that make that happen. And it's actually pretty amazing, because I think it allows us to actually be more and more human, be more creative, and actually be less machine-like. Let the machines do what the machines do, and let the humans be creative, strategic, and flower their intelligence versus having to just do, manual, repeatable tasks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting. So I see that you have volunteered and spoke with, I believe it's Black Girls Who Code.
Black Girls Code, yeah.
Yeah, Black Girls Code. So that kind of, your work as a volunteer and speaker and thought leader in the realm of being a data scientist and everything, that really ties into the role tied in there at Data 360. Is that right?
Right. Well, our main tagline with Data 360 is expanding possibilities. Mm-hmm. And we recently partnered with Google, which focuses on democratizing technology. So we're kind of in the camp of giving people access and giving people abilities with technology that haven't had that access. And Black Girls Code is part of that initiative for me personally. I do work with My Brother's Keeper and the Obama Foundation, as well as Girls Who Code, Step Up, the National Foundation for Technology Entrepreneurs, which is with high school students. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot of work. As a company, we dedicate ourselves to expanding possibilities, giving people access.
Wow. So, as a chief information officer, when you talk about the tech space, there's less than 10% of C-level executives that are women of color. There's very few companies that really focus on giving, Black and brown people more access to technology. So how is Data 360 really, taking the bull by the horns and being a leader in providing access and support to those who traditionally have been ignored, even though they're some of the biggest users of platforms like Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and the like?
Right. I would say, the biggest thing we do is we really spend time physically with people. We establish intimacy in the community. And we meet people. We do a lot of work with Mayor Garcetti's office to do that. We physically go to events and have forums and talk to people. I think it's pretty rare for tech companies to do that. I know our partnership with Google, that's really what the next phase of Google's about, is really being more in the community. And so we are just deeply committed to meeting people where they're at and being accessible, almost to a fault, right? we have a lot to do, but we do spend a lot of time really looking and meeting people, shaking people's hands. That's part of my sort of de facto roles in the company is also as the chief evangelist.
Okay.
I have a lot of technologists that work with me that people never see, that mm-hmm. people will never talk to, people never know exist, right? And thousands of them, which is great for us. But, you know, it's not, typically engineers don't really get to know people. That's not really what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So I love, establishing a different kind of feeling in the tech business and a different kind of accessibility. I know, I'm one of many, blacks in the technology business that are doing that now. And luckily a lot of us know each other now, which is great. And so it's been a different, experience than historically in my career. But I'm really proud to be a part of this next chapter in tech business.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So what are some of the things that you want, you know, let's switch gears to, you know, small entrepreneurs, who have, you know, who want to leverage this technology to grow their marketing and sales. What recommendations would you have for them to get started with using, you know, artificial intelligence and new technology to procure prospects and to hold in do business development, essentially?
Yeah, I think one of the things, you know, that we teach people is really it's about the creativity and the idea before it's about the technology.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can always build relationships with people who can build technology or work in technology.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a inaccessible field that way. What is unknown to most people of color and women is kind of the secret of business, mm-hmm. right? And how business, and I think the thing that we do that's unique is we're giving people access to business and capital infrastructure so that they can just focus on their ideas. Again, kind of in the same mind as our partnership with Google, that's kind of the same thing they're up to, which is, you know, don't worry about the infrastructure. Don't worry about the capitalization. Let's make it as accessible as possible. Let's take it down to $10 or $100 versus hundreds of thousands of dollars. And let's make sure that everybody has the ability to build and thrive. And have a sense of freedom that hasn't been available before.
Yeah, that's excellent. So I want my listeners to understand it correctly, if I'm wrong, that you're really providing training, information, support for business owners to basically remove the friction behind the learning curve and the time to launching websites and marketing to their clients, doing market research. I know that was something that I did notice on your website, that you guys do some aspect of market research. Is that correct?
Yeah. So we our bots, right? So there's we had this conversation yesterday with some of our trainees. Bots are a very broad subject. Everybody thinks of bots as a artificial intelligence that's talking to you because of Siri and Cortana and all of those, Alexa, right? But bots actually do a lot of other things besides talk to people and look up things. And so we do bots that actually perform marketing, sales, HR tasks. And one of those tasks is market research. We also provide customer intelligence, things that were typically done by secretaries. Or things that are typically done by, a intern. Mm-hmm. And so the reason why we are, persisting to replace secretaries and interns, because that's kind of those categories of jobs where people aren't allowed to be as creative or innovative as they should be. And so in order to kind of unleash people to their potential, you know, people always talk about replacing jobs and all this fun stuff, but it's not so much about that. It's really about shifting the economy from a industrial economy, which is about doing manual tasks and doing these, you know, things that are repeatable, to a creative economy. And so that's why we do those tasks, because we want to free up organizations to train people to be more strategic, more creative, more innovative.
Can you explain that one more time? you know, the shift from industrial to a, the term you used was a knowledge economy?
Creative.
Creative economy. That was the word that you used, okay. I think that is something that's really fascinating. I know, you know, with I have a 4-year-old son, and one of the things that I find myself doing is when I'm coding a website or doing something on the tech side, that I'm very quick to show him the code to get him kind of familiarized with that. So as you're on the forefront of shifting people's mindsets, business leaders, political leaders from an industrial economics mindset, how are you moving people more to this creative, you know, frictionless relationship with technology mindset? Like, what are some things you want people to know so they're not so intimidated by tech? That is one thing that, you know, I hear a lot of people.
Yeah. You know, all those things that they secretly do in their house or their side hustle or their yarn project or whatever, they can start to make money being themselves. And that's what the job, the new version of a job is or can be for a lot of people. It's just like, just whatever they do, whatever's natural to them, whatever flows out of them can be monetized. And turn into what used to be called a job. So, you know, don't be scared, you know, start pulling all those projects out of your basement and out of your closet and out of your head and start, you know, researching stuff and looking up, how to get it done, right? So that it can be sold in monetizing this infrastructure. And it seems scary, but it's kind of like we're in like a future path state, right, where, you know, there used to be old-fashioned marketplaces and people out there on the street selling their goods to each other and bartering, exchanging. The only difference is now we have the internet, which we can do that now on a global basis. We don't have to travel to the market square. We don't have to fly across to another country. We don't have to do any of that stuff because technology allows us to transact and build things across the globe quickly. And I think that's an amazing, I think it's an exciting world. I mean, you know, I just talked to somebody who's from Cyprus the other day, who's signing up to be a partner with us, and other people who are in, I met new partner in New Zealand who's from Auckland, and he wants to participate somehow. You know, it's so interesting. And he was telling me how people in New Zealand thought that people in LA, like, he was gonna, as soon as he got off the plane, he was gonna get shot or something. It's really funny. Don't be afraid. It's a wonderful free world, right? Sometimes freedom is scary to people, but I think, especially people under 35 are all down for it. So I think that is amazing.
Wow. That's powerful. You know, the internet is truly, you know, a powerful tool. And I agree with you. There's nothing to fear. That's why we explore tech and enjoy the music here at the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z. So for those who have tuned into the podcast, you're hearing Marie Smith, the CIO of Data360. And my next question to Marie is, what direction do you see technology moving with partnerships in the business arena? We talked about it overall affecting the economy from a high level point of view, but how do you see business models being affected as far as tech and partnerships?
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's pretty clear that the laptop and the web browser are going away. The idea of typing things is going away. Because computers can just understand you talking to them. We're almost at the point where computers can talk back. We're not quite there. We probably have another decade. But at least we can talk to computers and computers can answer back in text or bring a human on.
Something like the Starship Enterprise computer.
A little bit like the Starship Enterprise or HAL on 2001, but without the scary part.
Right.
Or, you know, any of those sci-fi movies. I know people always called, when I first talked about my inventions in Silicon Valley, people called them Minority Report, because that was the movie that was out at the time. And people said, oh, you're like Minority Report. And I'm like, not really. but there's definitely where technology is embedded in things, right? So there's a thing called embedded analytics, embedded software. And so chips are smaller and easier to deal with. I mean, you can put a chip inside your ear and have the wealth of a full server on it.
Right.
You know, that kind of stuff. And you know, I think that's an amazing world. I think my grandkids will laugh when I say, when you were born, we were still typing in computers. I think they'll laugh at that. I think they'll laugh at pushing buttons and typing, and you had to put in an address and wait for the address to respond. It's kind of like when I talk to 20-year-olds now and I talk about dial-up modems and the mail. When I talk about the mail, I remember last year I spent time with 12-year-olds in middle school, and I talked about how we used to talk to our friends when I was young. And I said we used to write letters, and then those letters would go in the mail with a stamp. And then we would have to wait 3 days, and we didn't know when it would come. And when we called people on the phone, there weren't necessarily answering machines. And we didn't know if somebody said they were going to call us, they would have to tell us the time they were going to call us, or we would miss their call. And we would not necessarily have known that they called us. I mean, that stuff is like hilarious now. But and they were just, their mouths were wide open. And, you know, we were building chatbots together, and they just couldn't believe that it was possible that world existed.
Wow.
So that was incredible to me. I was like, I can't believe that's happening. So, you know, my grandkids, you know, I'm fortunate enough I'll be able to have the conversation with my grandkids. I won't be out of touch, but it's still very interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. So for those entrepreneurs who are listening, those tech innovators that are listening, this question is for them. What do you think are the biggest mistakes people make when procuring a patent?
A patent? Oh, my God, my favorite subject. Well, you know, the best thing you can do is really do your homework and learn about competition, because patents are about uniqueness. And if you don't have a unique feature of your design or have the utility of it, I mean, like a utility patent, you're not going to get your patent. So, you know, it's very important to do what's called prior art research. You have to really know your market. One of the first things I did when I became an inventor was learn about prior art research, and I met with patent attorneys. This was probably about 15 years ago. And I learned about patents. And then, you know, sometimes you learn it's better to keep things a trade secret than to even publish a patent. Because trade secrets, you just don't tell it to anyone. Patents have to be published, and then patents can be, you know, bigger companies or competitors can look at your patent and try to create something slightly different and get their own patent and then destroy your market. So, you know, you have to think about intellectual property or designs in a very specific way. You really have to make sure that you have the ability to defend yourself in the marketplace, that people can't copy you easily. And that doesn't mean, you know, people are always paranoid about people copying people. People don't copy you until you're successful. But once you're successful, people will copy you. And sometimes it doesn't matter. If getting a patent doesn't really matter, because you're first to market and you can keep your advantage to yourself, because people don't know how you do what you do. But there's also, you know, it may not be necessary, because the market's going to pass by so fast. By the time you get your patent, it takes years to get a patent, sometimes up to 5 years. I don't know what the backlog is like right now, but it takes years and years and years to get a patent. So So it, by the time you even get it, it, the market may have already died down or changed or evolved. So the best thing for you to do is just to keep your mouth shut about how you do your things. And then make sure it's actually defensible because, you know, your competitors, you know, if you look at the Googles and the Microsofts and all that stuff, they file thousands of patents a year. They have patent libraries. And they have lawyers to enforce those patents. And you, as a small business owner, entrepreneur, don't have that.
Right.
So it may not even, it may not make a difference. It may not even be worth it. You have to really think about your opportunity and decide whether it's worth it.
Right, right. Wow. That is definitely a huge golden nugget for our listeners. So how did you build your team while getting a patent?
You know, really, I had to kind of be down home about it and say, God. what had a lot to do with it. You know, really just staying open and seeing what comes to me. And also knowing my worth, right? Not just accepting anything that comes along.
Can you elaborate on that, about knowing your worth? That's a very popular topic these days.
Yeah, so what I would say about that is it's really about how do you begin to help people understand that what you do is valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And that it deserves to be acknowledged, it deserves to be paid for, it deserves to be thought about. And it really should be able to be substantiated or validated. You shouldn't just, you know, there is delusion, right?
Right, right.
There is, like, you could say you're worth something, but, you know, there's not anything to really back that up.
Right.
So you have to be careful.
That's what the ROI comes.
And not, yeah, be careful on delusion. You know, there's the crazy thing about establishing a business and a legacy and building up an audience is there's so many different layers of lessons. And the best thing you can do is really figure out where you fit in the world. And that means you have to acknowledge others.
Mm-hmm.
You have to acknowledge their contribution and their worth and then see where you want to sit relative to that. And how much you want to justify yourself in the marketplace. Because, you know, it's not always so easy to just go out there, right? You really have to be ready. You have to be ready. You know, business is warfare, as a lot of people have said to me. And not warfare in the conventional sense. You can get hurt, right? And you can get damaged. But it's more, you know, psychological, intellectual, emotional. And you have to be ready for that. You have to be ready to talk about what you do. You have to be ready to defend it. And even if it's, like, completely ridiculousness, but you know that you can make something out of it and you really believe in it deeply, you just have to go out there and do it. But you also have to be prepared for feedback from the marketplace and from competitors. And you know, it may not work out. It may not, you know, and sometimes it takes a lot of failures. I mean, I've had hits and I've had misses and I've had danger zones and I've had all of that. Like real life threatening danger zones. You have to just kind of go, okay, I believe that this is, it's what I believe in and I'm going to stick with it no matter what. You know, somebody believed in the Pet Rock. Somebody launched it and somebody made $1 million.
Right. Right.
Right. Pet Rock was like, what is that? But people bought into it because of the belief in it, because of the story, because of the person who did it. So you can really sell anybody anything, but you also have to be aware that so can everybody else.
Right. So before I launch into my final question, I have one other question.
Yes.
How long did it take for you to determine your worth?
A really long time. It was in stages, I would say.
Going back to your layers of lessons.
Yeah, when I was young, it was sort of when I was 10, I had a really big turning point. I had a teacher that believed in me that I had known for a few years. And she was like, girl, you're the bomb. Like, you need to do stuff in the world. And I was kind of like, huh? And then she was like, here, I'm going to enroll you in this program. And so I was in a program, and I met professional people, Black people, white people, Mexican people, all people from all over the place. And I really got schooled in, like, this is how you make things happen. That was kind of the beginning. And it took practice. And then I realized, like, my peers weren't being taught that necessarily. And my family hadn't been taught that. And so that was huge, right? And I really had to learn how to stand apart from most people that I knew, which was strange and off-putting at first. Mm-hmm. And sad also. And then I had to kind of learn how to live a double life for a while. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, that kind of, you know, and that's kind of the one thing is, you know, the reality is most people are not interested in being successful. Most people are not interested in putting in the hard work. Most people aren't interested in standing apart from others. It's very uncomfortable at first until you get used to being that way. And then you learn to be with others who stand apart from others. And then you find out there's a whole tribe of people. but in the beginning, most of us are not born into leadership families. Most of us are not born into leadership communities. Mm-hmm. And so it's very disconcerting. It's very uncomfortable to be in that spot first, right? Right. So that was a big part of my journey, was just that, you know, an ever increasing world where I stood apart from others. Mm-hmm. And I always had an internal battle up until my 30s. I had an internal battle of, well, I need to go back and rescue people, or I need to go back and help people, or I need to go back and. And then you realize, you know, if you have a bunch of people who are drowning and then they're holding on to you, you one person will drown with them. You can't hold up everybody with you. You can't take everybody with you. And I've had conversations with so many people, super famous, people sort of famous, and people mm-hmm. who've been very successful. And everybody who comes from a disadvantaged background has the same feeling. Mm-hmm. I started to realize that. And then I'm like, oh, you can't take everybody with you. And then people who have that background and have been successful, they go through their ups and downs, right?
Right.
And then you right. can't help all of them. And it's interesting. You're always in this choice point mm-hmm. of self-worth and how much to right. give and how what the boundaries are and how much bandwidth how much you have. And so,
yeah,
just like us now with this new partnership, I've had to mm-hmm. say, I can't do this anymore. I'm sorry. I need to do this and take care of my family, and then that's the end of the day.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm like, you can come to our group things, you can do other things, but
right
now, this is all we can do.
Well, Marie, so, our time is coming to a close here, but I just want to share with my listeners, this is Marie Smith, you're listening to the CIO, the Chief Information Officer of Data 360. And on the Jazz and Tech Lounge, we have a closing question. Michael Jackson or Prince?
My favorite person.
Which would you prefer? Which one, Michael Jackson or Prince?
Michael Jackson or who?
Prince.
Oh, God. Michael Jackson or Prince?
Yes.
That's so difficult. Prince was my boyfriend growing up, so I have to say Prince. And I just met the Revolution like 2 months ago.
I met Lisa
and Wendy and got my selfie. I also met Quincy because I know some of Michael's friends. But I have to say, even though I love Quincy Jones, and Quincy Jones, if you're listening, I love you, and I'm so glad you asked me my sign. I thought that was the coolest thing to ever happen. So Quincy, if you hear this, you're the mom. I'm that tech girl you met. but Lisa and Wendy, and then Lisa and Wendy are missing. That was the highlight of my life. I told them right there, but they have to know again. That was the highlight of my life. So I would have to say Prince.
That's awesome.
I also know Madonna's people. Isn't that weird? It's so weird. I met Prince, Madonna, and Michael.
Yes, that's incredible. You know, I
can't believe
it. You know, I think music, you know, when people hear Jazz and Tech Lounge, they say, how is that related? But music and tech are very mathematically oriented endeavors. And I'm so happy you agreed to come on the show. And if our schedule allows, I definitely want you to come back and keep us updated with all the great fabulous things that you're doing there at Data 360. In closing, how can people connect with you online?
The best way to connect with me is to go to data360, data360.solutions, and email our support and be like, hey, I need to talk to Marie, and state your case. And we'll see if we can help you.
All right. That sounds awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to the SEO Queen continuing to work and learn from Data360. And you have been listening to the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady D, where we explore tech and enjoy the music, coming to you all the way from New York City on the Bashani Network. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Visit QSurance.com. Are you paying too much for flood insurance? Paying on a FEMA insurance policy that is through the roof? Call Insurance Group at 866-QUB-2121. That's 866-783-2121. Or go to their website, QSurance.com. That's QUESURANCE. QSurance.com. Get your flood insurance quotes straight to the point. They have access to multiple private market flood carriers to make sure you get the lowest price. A non-participating coastal barrier or cobra community. No elevation certificate? Not a problem. Call Insurance Group at 866-QUB-2121. Licensed in New Jersey, Virginia, South Carolina, Wisconsin, and Texas. You can also compare your home, auto, and business insurance at www.QSurance.com. It's free, so why not let them help you save money today? Call 866-783-2121 or go to QSurance.com now.
locked it in and fully loaded.
Bashani Radio
and Verkay Radio.
They said we couldn't do it,
but we global now, worldwide. Boom! In your face.